Accession number 20457, reel 27.
Brigadier Randall, reel 27. You were explaining to me about the way your outpost platoons were protected with wired-in buildings as their bases,
yes,
and vehicle checkpoints.
Yes, it was. It could have been a problem. I mean, if it had been, what I didn't operate in Northern Ireland, but I mean, we weren't able to clear buildings away, and had the Eoka been a good deal more aggressive than they were, I think we could have had problems because they could have lobbed grenades in and that sort of thing. They could have sniped it, but we were as professional and as alert and secure minded as we could be, but it was of limited effectiveness, or would have been if it had a serious attempt to harass us, or harass us rather.
You mentioned that one night, going back late, you were ambushed, or there was an attempt to ambush you on the road that went wrong. Were there any other major incidents during your time there?
No. I can't pretend that it wasn't. I think everybody, the Yoker as well as ourselves, realised that they looked as though there was going to be a political settlement. Mm. All negotiations were going on, and it's rather like the sort of end of World War II. No one either side particularly wanted to go and stick his neck out and get himself killed or injured. It was.
Did you have any casualties to enemy action?
No. We didn't come under fire. The only person remotely. Mine was precarious. Any person was myself, really. No, we didn't.
Leading from the front.
Well, disobeying his own orders. Not an incident I'm particularly proud of.
What could you do to arrange for recreation for your soldiers while they were in this area? Was there anything that could be organised?
Well, I made a rule of one day a week, every platoon had to have a day off operations, and I made them then nothing else but sort of make and mend, kit inspection, half an hour's arms drill, and this is in the morning. A thorough sort of military check out everything, make sure boots, all the sort of usual things that go on, and then in the afternoon I'd make them go and play a football match if it was go and play in the Turkish village. They'd not turn out. I'd have sentries out and bread guns out and that sort of thing. So that was within the company in my own area. They used to grumble, but actually they quite liked having a day off, and it was a good opportunity for them to catch up on the minutiae of administration. And then we could, the guards, I say, were very good. They were in proper barracks in Tecalia. And then on a rest, I could send parties of soldiers in there for a day off, where they could have a bath and a bit of football, a good piss up. At least at the night. They could sort of. I mean, we had Rebecca. I think we did have a little mini amount of drinking, but clearly, in operations, you can't have chaps drinking. And therefore, I don't think the soldiers had any. I think we had booze, obviously, but I don't think the soldiers did. So it was a good idea once in a while, let them go off and have a bloody good sort of piss up.
So it's often said that one of the great dangers in counterinsurgency is boredom, because most of the time nothing is happening. There are restrictions and there are privations and no excitement to compensate.
Yeah. Well, later on when we get on to British Guiana, I mean, I had quite a difference of opinion, because you're quite right, I think boredom is one of the biggest problems facing leadership in this sort of situation. And you've got to constantly be thinking of how to deal with it. But
the danger is that if a soldier is bored and he ceases to be alert, that's when he's in danger, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And
I argue the chap said, well, you can't keep changing your platoons round. And I said,
yes.
He said they got to know it. I said, but if a chap's gone up here every day for a fortnight or a week, he's bored stiff with it.
Mm.
And he's much better to change him over so it's all new and alert. But
it comes later.
It happened in British Guiana.
Yes, yes. Did you see any signs of ennui and boredom amongst your soldiers in Cyprus?
No, because it was quite a challenging sort of landscape. And by platoon commands could vary the patrol where chaps went.
Yes.
And we weren't there really long enough.
Mm.
I think it might have been a problem if we'd been there for 3 or 4 more months.
Now, around about the time you were there, there was an intervention operation going on. We sent 16th Independent Parachute Brigade Group into Jordan, and there were prospects of operations of a similar nature to deploy into Libya and other parts of the Eastern Mediterranean. Did you know anything about that at the time?
I don't think so. Before the Argyles were the Middlesex was there.
Yes.
And they were suddenly sent from Decalia to the Middle East.
Mm.
I remember we all cheered them passing by in their truck going down to Limassol. And I remember wondering at the time, why are they going there? But the answer to your question is no. I don't think we were aware of anything going on, really.
Mm.
I mean, we got newspapers and things, but I'd even forgotten that, actually. But certainly, I don't recall.
So I think part of the idea was that Cyprus would be a good base from which to mount rapid intervention operations in cases of trouble bubbling up all the way around the Mediterranean basin.
Yes. Well, the Akrotiri, I can't remember, Akrotiri was in use then, yes, but we flew into Nicosia.
Yes.
Don't quite know why we did, and not into Akrotiri. Mm-hmm. But
And I have a notion that at that time Nicosia was the main air trooping.
But we weren't aware. I can't remember that parachute brigade. Did they stage through Cyprus?
Yes, they flew into Cyprus, and the cover story was that they were there to reinforce the Cyprus garrison because it was possible there might be a resurgence of Ayoka activity.
Yes. Well, that's news to me. I wasn't aware of it anyway. Yeah.
They actually left one battalion behind in Cyprus, and it was...
That's right, yes, they did, yes.
Two battalions.
They were around, they were near us in Polymedia, that's right, yes.
Yes.
Later on, yeah.
But you didn't hear anything about those operations at the time?
No.
What happened to you after Cyprus, then, when Cyprus finished? Did you go back to Germany with the battalion?
Well, yeah, because... the Ayoka business packed up.
Yes.
Then we reverted to peacetime soldiering.
In Cyprus.
In Cyprus. And I was told by the CEO, my company reverted to support weapons, and they told me to get it trained up to them. I got on with that. My wife and family and son came out. And we just settled down to a very agreeable sort of a peacetime soldiering. It was a very pleasant place to be, really.
Where were you based for that?
We're down at Polymedia
Where is that?
Oh, sorry, just on the northern outskirts of Limassol. Mm.
But was that in proper barrack accommodation?
Well, we started off in tents, which was a... Oh, sorry. I better go. Yeah. Yes, and then we moved into funnier wooden barracks put up by Kitchener when he was a...
Were they still in good condition?
Subaltern or captain in there back in the 1880s, I think.
1880s or 1890s,
yes. Anyway, this was the thing. And we got, and we had brigade exercises, and that's all. It's all normal peacetime training, really.
How long did it take for your chaps to get back into their role as support company and become capable of handling their weapons well?
I had to have three very good officers, and they'd all done the courses, and I worked them pretty hard. And it didn't take very long because they'd all been, there were a certain number of NCOs and chaps who had residual knowledge of the weapons from before we were turned into a rifle company. We certainly, I think I was lucky, but we got a brigade exercise anyway, and the report was that the chief umpire was the best support company he'd ever seen, which actually was cock. It's just happened that every time the ball's up, there was nobody around, and when things were going well, the umpire turned up. Mm-hmm. But the brigadier, anyway, the CA was sort of somewhere, was very pleased with this, and so I basked in the reflecting glory. Mm-hmm. But I did work them jolly hard, and the great thing about rifles was you could go and fire weapons. It wasn't too much difficulty. Mm-hmm. So we did a lot of firing, and I chased them around quite a bit and set little exercises, night withdrawals and that sort of thing. Quite difficult moving a support company at night, you know, getting out of your, as you're sure you know, if you're in a position, you've got to go right recce and go back and then get your gun lines in and all the rest of it, and the same with machine guns and that sort of thing. So, and then I made the march right across Cyprus from south to north. I said, you're getting support companies, you're driving about, and they all ticked like hell. And the CA said, I think you're making a mistake. So I said, well, I'm sorry, Colonel, but anyway, I'm sure I'm going to do it. So we did it, and actually it was a success. And they didn't just march. I every day I have, you know, the sort of a, I had ambush parties out, or soldiers hidden, where if you could see them, you could see them, but you had to be observant. And I had, you know, so many. At the end of the day, each section had to sort of say where it had seen the chap, and then we were marched over the Troodos, a couple of nights up there playing soccer with the Black Watch, down the other side, and then. Finished up on a marvellous beach where they had 48 hours doing nothing else. And actually, the soldiers, when it was all over, of course, they were ticking like clocks on the word. They were fucking hell. But then, of course, they were swagging around and saying, well, we are the chaps who marched across the island. And so actually, it was a bit of a gamble. It could have been a cock-up, but I was just lucky. Anyway, it was... So the company was got quite fit, and as the great thing, I had three jolly good officers. Mm.
When it comes to the weapon handling, how long did it take before they got back to that and were up?
Well, not too long, because
standard.
I think we had plenty of ammunition, and we could get ranges pretty frequently. I mean, they had machine guns. There was a thing called the machine gun cup, which is every machine gun platoon in the army used to enter. The rules were laid down as to what you had to do, but then you entered it, and then the local district headquarters sent an independent chap out, and they worked up to that, actually. Mm-hmm. We spent hours up there, and they did quite well. I don't think they win it, but they did quite well anyway. There were something like about 70 or 80 machine gun platoons throughout the army. Mm-hmm. It was all postal matters, you know. Anyway. So that the great thing was that we could fire weapons, and there was no we didn't have a great deal of guard duties. I was more or less left alone by the CO to say, this is what I want you to do, get to talk. And so, far more opportunity to fire weapons and train than there would be in this country, where you've got to book a range weeks ahead. To get firing, you've got to go up to Otterburn or somewhere. But there, it was just a question of booking it and then driving a few shepherds and a few goats off the thing and then blazing away with it. So it was the ideal situation to get them up to a high standard.
Did you notice a dramatic change in relations with the Greek Cypriot population once the emergency was over? Was there a change of mood?
There'd never been a great minor. There'd been no extreme bitterness. So the other campaign was fought on pretty clean lines. Apart from one incident when we were there, women on either side were sacrosanct, there was no question of doing anything which would either directly or indirectly injure women or children. And women, British women, wives and people in town shopping were unmolested. Same time, we were at pains to not to offend their women. So that there was only one occasion when two women, wives of Ulster Rifles, were attacked, I think. And then the Ulster Rifles took extreme measures. They really sorted out the Greeks. And I think they really was quite something. But I think the message got around. The British can be just as dirty as we are. So, but apart from that one incident, and therefore, there wasn't any, I don't think, lasting antipathy. I don't say that you were welcomed. I don't mean they were all smiles and things, but they realised it was over now and that the British were going to move out of them. And Greg, I think they always like custom too. Restaurants and places, they're quite glad to have British soldiers in there spending their money. So there wasn't the same feeling of hostility that, for instance, that you got with the Mama or I imagine in Northern Ireland.
You were saying earlier on that you learned some lessons in Kenya that you applied in Cyprus. What were those?
Well, most of our administration you go out, you roar out there, this happened several times, same way we went to British Guiana, you go out there, you're flown out all a hurry, there's tremendous excitement, and then it's all over, and then sort of begins to, then there's God awful place, no birds, no beer, nothing for months. And then suddenly morale go down, and unless you get your administration absolutely right, and the food and the laundry and entertainments, or unless you get that right, you're in for trouble. And there's the lessons I learnt were more on the administrative side. Than on the operational side. At the same time, I did learn. The ambush drills were very much the same against the Yokos. They were against anybody really, and those sort of things. But it was on the administrative side really, the getting that right, because that is. The success, that is the principal morale factor.
What were the ambush drills that you normally carried out in Cyprus?
I can't remember. But I'm just trying to think now. Were they different? Well, I mean, they're more or less the same anyway. Depending on where the what the terrain is, I mean, you get out and get under cover as soon as possible. And the front of the vehicle go out forward where they go, and the back go out and get your automatic weapons out quickly and trying to locate and re-engage the enemy's fire, really. It's a long time. I'd have to sit down and think about it now. I started to give a demonstration of it. Or sit down and think about the cardinal points of ambush drills. It's difficult now.
Well, what about having scouts out forward? Was that a normal precaution against ambush?
You mean in vehicles or on foot?
On foot. Well, on foot.
Oh, on foot. You normally do have a couple of chaps out in front.
Mm. But you can't really do that with vehicles, can you? Unless you've got a light vehicle leading.
Well, yes. I mean, if you're in a convoy, obviously you do have. Yeah, you will have them well spaced out. You know. Mm. Yeah. I mean, you can't pick at the heights like the Northwest Frontier. There, I mean, to some extent, you're always a hostage to fortune in a vehicle, up against skilled opponents.
Mm. What happened when you'd finished with your period of time in Cyprus? Did you go back with the battalion?
No. I should have been longer, but I was sent back. There was a thing called a General Staff Science course.
Yes.
See, we'd done no nuclear training of any sort at Campbell in 1950. So they set up this sort of short course at Shrivenham for those majors, those PSC graduates who had never done any nuclear trainings.
Mm.
So I was ordered to go back on that, to my annoyance, because I was perfectly happy coming to Company right in Cyprus, and my family was there, my wife. Mm. And I didn't particularly want to get back in the depths of winter and do this course at Shrivenham. But that was the order, so I went back for that.
What did they teach you? Did any of that stay?
Well, they attempted to teach us a great deal about nuclear war. It wasn't a very good course, I don't think, because I didn't know. I sat at the back with a lot of other individuals, so I didn't understand most of it.
Why was that? Was it simply too scientific for you?
Yes.
Mm. Too technical?
Yes. The only thing I was gratified is I had another chap. The only practical exercise we were set was something to do with anti-tank weapon design and so on, and we got the best results simply because we were practical soldiers. Mm. But I didn't understand half of it. I mean, they made it. I wasn't a mathematics or science. I mean, I'd done modern languages and history. They made assumptions about our knowledge of mathematics and of physics, which. Was in my case hopeless, and therefore we simply didn't understand it.
Who was actually doing the teaching on this course?
Well, it was a mixture of civilian academics and military officers with some PTSD, with some background.
Mm.
I don't think it was a waste of time, but I can't say that I just once again learnt the depth of my ignorance, if nothing else. It was quite pleasant. The beast in use of domestically, because you come back with your family and got nowhere to live, and then they say, find yourself a hiring. I mean, I had to go and do that. Depth of winter. I think that was my 11th move in 15 months or something.
Very disruptive.
Yeah, I was. When I finally finished, when I became MDA Master Corps Commander, he was talking. I was used as a case to just illustrate the embuggerance which the young officers had to put up with. I obviously dirt on you from it, but if I say if not else, if only my own ignorance. It focused my mind, or it made me think a bit about nuclear warfare. I certainly did, but it wasn't a very well run course of it.
Your next job, I think, was to a Corps staff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was the Deputy Military Secretary of the Corps Commander.
First BR Corps in Germany. Yeah. You hadn't worked on a Corps staff before,
no.
Or a divisional staff.
No.
So it must have been quite a leap from having been a...
Well, it was a specialised job. I was his private military secretary.
Yes.
And so it was a one-off job, really, because...
It wasn't really like a regular staff job.
No. See, only two people had direct access to the Corps Commander, his Chief of Staff and me.
Mm.
And I handled all the sort of officer confidential business.
Who was the Corps Commander?
A chap called Splosh Jones.
Ah, yes, I've heard of him. He was an engineer, wasn't he, originally?
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
Super chap.
Yeah.
But I handled all the sort of confidential reports and then all appointments and that sort of thing.
Mm.
I had no experience of it, I just happened to get on with him.
How had you met him? Had you met him before?
No.
Splosh
no.
Jones? Have you any idea why it was you were chosen for that particular appointment?
No, I do know. Because my late CEO of the Devons went off to MS.
Yes.
And... I think by then the regiment had made up their mind that they wanted me as the next CEO. And I think he wasn't actually doing things. But I was given some other pretty job and he went along and said, look, this isn't bloody well good enough for John Randall. He's a senior major. And so, anyway, he got me this job. He fixed it in the MS. But a jolly nice job, really. As long as I got on with the Corps Commander, which I did. He was an Ulsterman, and his wife's an Ulster woman, and my wife's an Ulster woman. It was something I'd never done before, but it was quite... and of course, on exercises, I was acted as his sort of MA, and I used to run his sort of... his own little Corps Commander's little battle group thing with his ADC. You know, we'd move all his command vehicles around and we'd take over the farmhouses. And because of all this, I had to get all the briefings. I was cleared for all the officers. So I had to know all the operational... I went to all the operational briefings for the Corps deployment. So that was nothing to do with my job as... on the military secretary side, but it was part of the job of being his sort of DAMS. He didn't have an MA, so he tended to use me as a... He often used to take me out on exercises, because he was a sapper, and I was an IFJOS, and he realised I'd been in the war, and I saw the MC, that sort of thing. So he liked to take me around and say, you take a look at the infantry, John, see what you think about it sort of business. So I enjoyed it, actually.
Was there anything going on at that time in at Corps level with regard to it?
Well, no. I mean, there was a very big exercise, Spearpoint, the one and only Corps exercise I think they ever did. It cost so much in damages. I think they stopped it after that. But it was the height of the Cold War. And
yes. The Cuban Missile Crisis occurred in 1962, didn't it?
Yes, I'd left by
yes,
then.
Yeah, so you'd got...
But I mean, the Russians were pretty hostile, and therefore
yes.
The Corps had to be in a pretty high state of readiness, and there was a lot going on, all exercises at every level.
Do you remember what the outline scenario was for Spearpoint and what sort of manoeuvres you were practising on that exercise?
Well, of course, Spearpoint was deliberately... not like the real deployment.